This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from in all your favorite genres, and they're ready to download to your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time. With your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, the Labor Day edition. Happy Labor Day to everybody out there. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham and the returning Marcus Vanderbilt.
It's been a great weekend, Nathan.
What's up, Nate?
You're still on that Nathan thing, man.
Sometimes I decide to bust it out.
This is how we starting the show.
What is it? What's your African name, Alfred?
Alfred. You can call me Boyma if you want. It's my middle name.
Nah.
Yeah. But yeah, we got a big show in store for you guys today. Not only are we going to talk some college football, not only are we talking professional football. Of course, you know, we're going to have to talk a little bit about Tebow. But we will also be recapping the draft that recently took place with the Kings of Sport Fantasy Football League. And, of course, we got the Ringside Wrap, Segment 4, all those great topics that you expect each and every week from the show. So it is good to have Marcus. Marcus, since you were here last week, how was your week? How was your weekend, man? And did you miss us?
I missed you guys. I appreciated all the shout-outs in the show last week. Despite all the technical errors, we will overlook that. How was my week? I had a good week. I'm now officially a full-timer at Yahoo. I was a contractor before, so moving on up the food chain here.
Was this before or after your fantasy draft grade?
Just before.
Because they may take that back.
Oh, yeah, we'll save the fantasy talk. Don't worry. Yeah, I got something for you, Nate.
Marcus has got some. I got something, too.
Yeah, it's going to be a tag team here. but no, it's been a good week. Summer's over. Officially. Sad about that, but, you know, living in L.A., it feels like summer is, you know, year-round with this weather, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, the good thing about summer, you know, ending and the fall beginning is it's time for football.
It is.
And that you know, the sport of kings is better than a diamond ring, football, as the Wildcats would say. And so let's start it off. You know, this was the first real weekend of college football just passed, and the story of the first weekend, much like he was the story of the offseason, is one Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, who was, and I'm using air quotes right now, suspended, disciplined, punished by the NCAA, who had him sit out for a cup of coffee in Texas A&M's first game. And it didn't take long once Johnny got in the second half to not only show production on the field, but also give you a glimpse of. Some people hate this dude. Some people love this guy, but they're always going to be talking about him. So, you know, starting with you, Marcus, what were some of your takeaways from the college football weekend, and in particular with Johnny Manziel?
Starting with Manziel, he's an asshole. I mean,
like, just a tell shit. Him why you mad, son.
No, I still like Johnny Manziel, but that's just an asshole thing to do. You gotta learn how to ignore the taunting from the defense. I mean, come on, like, you gotta. It's Rice we're talking about. Whatever the Rice guys are saying, you got to just ignore it. They're Rice. So he fell for the trap. I did appreciate the little money sign call out that he was doing in response to the NCAA. And he also had the little, he was doing the autograph sign to the Rice player. So I did appreciate that. But I didn't appreciate that stupid penalty at the very end of the game. And, you know, Tevin Sumlin made the right choice by taking him out. And hopefully this will be the last of his antics in terms of 15-yard penalties, but you know, on the field, we saw why he won the Heisman Trophy last year. He was just as dynamic as other, just as dynamic as last year. And, you know, it's all coming down to the Alabama game in 2 weeks and to see how prepared he will be for Alabama and if Alabama has an answer this time for him.
A lot of the reason of Johnny Manziel acting out is Kevin Sumlin, who I think should be dubbed Spineless Sumlin. He's going and using an excuse that, yeah, I had to take him out as a punishment after what he did. They were up by like 21 points by then, and there was very little time the game. So, yeah, they took him out probably to rest him. And now Kevin Sumlin is hiding behind this. Johnny Manziel is entitled. He's spoiled. He's immature. He's thin-skinned. And if he was with somebody like a Nick Saban, who runs a very tight ship, and you see the results of his tight ship, he wouldn't ever get away with this type of behavior. But now we realize that the boss in Texas A&M is Johnny Manziel, and he runs everything. You saw his body language when he was going to the sideline, and someone tried to warn him, hey, stop doing that. He just kind of brushed him off, like, whatever, dude, you work for me. And that's the culture that's been created, and it's going to be to their detriment.
Marcus, is he talking about the same Nick Saban that got players beating up people for lunch money?
I'm talking about the Nick Saban that could be the first coach in the history of college football to win 3 national championships. That Nick Saban.
But let's not hold Nick Saban up like he's this paragon of virtue and his players never do anything wrong.
His players do just as much dirt.
Do you think Johnny Manziel would be as much of an off-season, on-the-field story if he was with Nick Saban? Hell no!
I don't know. They've had their share of suspensions, arrests, dismissals.
That they have. But I'm telling you right now, the here and now in Alabama, I'm just talking about an authoritarian. I'm not saying Nick Saban is the greatest person ever. You throw anybody in there, an authoritarian who's respected where the buck stops with them. How many times do we have to talk about Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M before you get the Spineless Sumlin? Nobody, I have half of college football probably doesn't even know who he is because he does not run the program as he is the authoritative figure. It's Johnny Manziel and the also-ran.
But the thing about Sumlin, though, what would you want him to do? I mean, he took him out immediately after that 15-yard penalty.
Yeah,
I mean,
he had scored his third touchdown when he goes 6 of 8 and he had completely battered Rice into the ground. Don't give me that. If Rice would have come storming back, Johnny Manziel's back in that game. That had nothing to do with Johnny Manziel being – even the commentators were brushing it off. Well, the lead commentator said, oh, wow, now I wonder if he's trying to send a message. And the color guy was like, no, come on. The game is well in doubt. They don't want him back out there to get hurt or anything like that. That had nothing to do – I don't care what someone says to try to save face. That had nothing to do with Johnny Manziel being punished.
See, I don't think you can use that as an example of Kevin Sumlin not having discipline. I think the better example and the example that stood out to me watching that game was the kid that got the penalty for targeting. The same kid that had to sit out the first 2 quarters early on in the game. I'm not remembering the kid's name right now, but then was tossed out of the game and they showed him crying on the assistant coach's shoulders. That, to me, shows more of a lack of discipline and a problem within the locker room than, you know, him taking Johnny Manziel out of a 15-yard penalty.
You know, the thing with Sumlin is, look, his end goal is the NFL. So what's the best way to get to the NFL is having Johnny Manziel be Johnny Manziel and lead your team to, you know, possibly a national championship. Sumlin's not going to – he's not crazy. He's not going to do anything that jeopardizes Manziel's playing time. I mean, there's a line that he – shouldn't be crossing, and he did cross that line. But, you know, I think he pretty much has free range. Alfred's right. He has free range because Sumlin knows that his best ticket to get to the pros is through Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, Sumlin's like, do you know how many black coaches are in college? Black coaches are successful and get more than one contract in college football. And do you know how many black coaches are being looked at by the NFL? I'm that dude. So if you get jammed up, don't mention my name. Let Johnny play. That's what Sumlin is thinking.
So in order to advance black coaches in college football, you have to turn into a slave? I mean, Johnny Manziel is not the boss of that program. And way long ago, before we heard the first story in the offseason about Johnny Manziel, there should have been a time where Kevin Sumlin called him into his office and said, hey, man, he didn't have to yell at him and crack out the whip. He should have just said, hey, man, just ease up. All right, you're a leader in this program. We need you to act like one. Can he have one talk with the kid? If there's one person in college football who deserves to be reprimanded, who deserves to be reeled in, it's Johnny Manziel, because this kid is entitled, spoiled, and he's now in a position to where that program goes through him. His ego is officially out of control, and it's not going to end well. I'm telling you right now.
How do you know he hasn't had a conversation, though? To me, Johnny Manziel doesn't strike me as the kind of kid that listens to tough love or is easily coachable.
Okay, we've heard every other story leak about Johnny Manziel. I mean, maybe when they start losing, we're going to hear something like that. But I guarantee, you know, if he has had that conversation, that's even worse. I'm doing this out of the little respect I have left for Kevin Sumlin to assume that he hasn't had this conversation, which is why Johnny Manziel's acting like this. If he has had that talk and Manziel is still acting like this, that's even worse.
Yeah, and the other takeaway from that game was his backup, Joku, performed well in the first half. So if there was a situation where Manziel got out of line or Manziel got hurt, based on the way he plays, then it looks like they have an adequate backup behind Manziel. So it'll be interesting to watch Texas A&M all season long.
Yeah, so let's move from Texas A&M and Johnny Football, and let's move to Nick Saban, the paragon of virtue, the most pristine coach, the second coming of Newt Rockne, as Alfred would say, and the defending champs, and they stomped a mud hole in Virginia Tech, walked it dry, had Frank Beamer looking sad all night long, and Alabama looked real good. I'm a big fan of A.J. McCarron. He's not the most exciting player in the game.
He did not look good, though.
Yeah, Alabama did not look good. If you watch this game, all right, and people from Las Vegas watch football games, and they know what's overvalued, what's undervalued. You look at that win, and that is a very, very inflated win. Alabama's offense was outplayed by Virginia Tech's defense that entire game. The only thing separating them was two special teams touchdowns and a defensive touchdown, and that's the major difference in your ballgame. Otherwise, Alabama had about 86 yards of offense in the first half of that game. They looked awful. And that offensive line, which, you know, that's where all the people left, and that's where all their starters left. Now there's starting to be question marks, and hopefully with this 2 weeks they have to prepare for Texas A&M, they are able to figure out those concerns.
If Virginia Tech had a quarterback other than Logan Thomas on the field, they would have a decent shot, but he's awful. 5 of 26, 59 yards, one interception. Logan Thomas, everyone.
And in all fairness to Logan Thomas, as bad as he did look, Mark, I agree with you, he really doesn't have very much help and support. Those wide receivers couldn't get open for the life of them. But, yeah, Logan Thomas looked bad, and it was Virginia Tech's defense that I feel bad about because they played wonderfully. What happened to Beamer Ball? Isn't Frank Beamer supposed to be some special teams wizard? And they absolutely got embarrassed on special teams that entire game.
He lost his fastball. He's getting up there in age. Maybe. I mean, Virginia Tech has not been great in almost 10 years
even
now.
Even when they're ranked.
Even when they're ranked,
they're a solid mid-carder, basically, in college football. They're not going to get back to where they've been, I don't think, unless they get some really strong recruits. But they're always a good test, and I think for Alabama, it was a good test. You know, they're not playing a cupcake school. You know, Virginia Tech's going to give you a tough game, but they don't have the horses to compete with those upper echelon teams like an Oregon, like an Alabama.
And that's their last game before Texas A&M on the 14th. So, based on the way Alabama played against Virginia Tech, I don't see them beating A&M at this point.
Yeah, but now they have 2 weeks to prepare with the best coach in the game, who's going to be able to see that they played an imperfect game against Virginia Tech, and now he has flaws to work out. It's better that than they go out and become world beaters and absolutely dominate Virginia Tech on all sides of the football, and you don't know where to improve. Now they're going to be a little hungrier. They're going to have that revenge taste in their mouth, and you never know. I think that game can go either way, but I think the difference is going to be Nick Saban with 2 weeks to prepare.
Now, let's go from Alabama to a team that I'm keeping my eye on, and the guy that, you know, we talk about Johnny Manziel, we talk about A.J. McCarron. This is the guy that would get my Heisman vote. Granted, it's only been 1 week, but I, you know, am fully in the camp of this cat, and that is one Taj Boyd and the Clemson Tigers. One of the best games, if not the best game over the weekend, we saw Clemson taking on Georgia. And Taj Boyd had a nice little season debut, fellas.
Is he my Heisman favorite? No, I would take Teddy Bridgewater over Taj Boyd, but that's just me. But a good game, and Georgia's really screwed. I think that's what they did at South Carolina, so they'd be 0-2 after the first 2 weeks, and that would pretty much put a wrap on their BCS dreams. But this might be the year that Clemson finally gets over the hump.
I mean, they really don't have another tough game until Florida State, I believe, on October 19th. So, you know, they could put string together a bunch of wins, and you know, they're already in the top 10. I think Clemson, the ACC is not the strongest conference. Clemson could make some noise.
Yeah, I was reserving my judgment for Clemson to see because they've never been a very good big game team. But I just kind of sat back and watched. Let's see what they do against Georgia. And they've gotten over this hump. Hopefully there's not a comedown loss. But now they have to be considered as a favorite to go to the national title game. Taj Boyd played very well. He has Sammy Watkins, which will be a story because Sammy Watkins is a very, very dynamic wide receiver who had an off year last year, and I think he's going to come back and be dynamite for that team. Taj Boyd is a superstar in college football right now. He may not be the level of a Jacoby Jones because it doesn't get any bigger in football than Jacoby Jones, but Taj Boyd is somebody who I feel can be a top-flight superstar in college football. Maybe not the Heisman. It's too early for that, but I think he could be a star.
Yeah, and again, some of Boyd's numbers, 18 to 30 passing for 270 yards with 3 touchdowns, rushed 13 times for 42 yards, added 2 touchdowns with that. So, you know, Boyd is one of those players that is just fun to watch, and I'm really rooting for this kid. You know, came back for his senior season. A lot of kids would have gone and taken that NFL money, but Boyd came back. I think it was a smart move, both speaking about his game and also financially, you know, in order to reap the benefits possibly down the line in the NFL. And if Clemson can keep their ducks in a row and you know, get over some of those hurdles, like I said, Florida State's probably their biggest hurdle in the ACC. If they can take care of business, Clemson can make some noise as we get close to the postseason.
Well, the problem is their last game is against South Carolina, at South Carolina, November 30th. So that is an odd game. That's South Carolina's an SEC team. I'm not sure why they scheduled this game so late, but that game could prevent them from even making the BCS run because they could, you know, lose to South Carolina and then, you know, win the ACC championship game. But with that one loss, that might be bid for Clemson there.
It could, and I could also see Clemson losing a game that they're supposed to win. Usually teams in Clemson's position that struggle in big games, once they get that monkey off their back, they tend to relax a little bit. And that could happen to Clemson where they lose a game to an opponent, maybe at home, that they're supposed to blow out.
Now, other than those three big games, were there any other surprises or shocks in this first weekend of college football, Marcus?
Surprises. Well, we had a bunch of FCS schools losing to FBS schools or 1AA schools. I don't know what the new calling is. I forgot what it was. But we had 6 1AA schools defeat Division I schools over the weekend, which was a bit of a surprise. Probably the biggest one was Eastern Washington defeating Oregon State at home in Corvallis. They're a top 25 team, so not a good look for the top 12. Any other surprises? The USC offense looked terrible.
Not much of a surprise there.
Yeah, it was a good weekend of college football, not a great weekend of college football. I really did enjoy the game on Thursday between Rutgers and Fresno State. That was a shootout. They ended it in overtime, but overall, it was all right weekend of college football.
Yeah, I know you two cats are in Pac-12 country, excuse me. But what did you think about Washington beating Boise State, Brother Alfred?
I thought it was great. I thought Washington with Steve Sarkisian, they look good. I mean, listen, Washington, Boise State perennially, I have always thought has been an overrated team. And now we're in a year in an era for Boise State where they aren't quite as good. There's no Kellen Moore. There's no top flight players with Boise State that gets them into that national title discussion. And now that they're off the radar, for them to lose like this is not very good for their program, which has traditionally been very small.
It's about time that Washington has, you know, gets over that hump. It's been the 7th year now for Sarkisian at Washington, and you know, this is the year that he needs to, you know, show up. And Keith Price is a pretty underrated quarterback there they have in Washington. He's a local kid from LA. And he tore Boise State up on Saturday. So they switched to an up-tempo offense. So we'll see how this works out for the rest of the year for Washington.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, a lot of interesting outcomes and some expected outcomes of college football in the first week. But we'll leave it right there, and we'll go to the pro game for a second to end off the A block. And it was some bad news for a lot of players this past week, and maybe chief amongst them, or maybe most famous amongst them, was one Timothy Tebow. And like sands through the hourglass, the days of Tim Tebow's football life may be over.
I'm surprised it lasted this long.
You know, the days of Bill Belichick being a genius may be over. I'm hearing people say, Tim Tebow couldn't even make it in Bill Belichick's genius system. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. The Patriot way is something we've been hearing about for years, in that the Patriots are able to take in anybody and make them a star, next man up, all that crap. But basically, we've seen the Patriots take in Albert Haynesworth and it didn't work. We've seen the Patriots take in Chad Johnson. It didn't work. Brandon Lloyd, who was a stud in Denver under Josh McDaniels, Patriots offensive coordinator, he came into New England under that same coordinator, and it really didn't work. And now Tim Tebow didn't work. Why? Because Bill Belichick may not be as much of a genius as everybody is saying it is. Let's face it. The Patriot way is playing in the AFC East, where no team has a chance at a Super Bowl but the Patriots, who are essentially guaranteed a home game in the playoffs every year. Yes, the Jets went to back-to-back AFC Championship games, but we've seen what kind of grease fire they are. Let me name you the quarterbacks in that division. Tom Brady, hooray! Ryan Tannehill? Jeff Toole? Come on, guys. Mark Sanchez or Geno Smith? The AFC East has been very kind.
Hey, the Jets,
and
did,
it's not
the Jets did have a big signing today, though, Alfred.
Alex Green?
Brady Quinn.
Brady Quinn!
Oh, Jesus.
The Brady Quinn era!
Well, I rest my case.
Yeah. To me, I mean, this is it's kind of a surprise, a little bit of a surprise. I thought that the Patriots, you know, Belichick, again, having that genius label, they'd find a way to work Tebow in somehow. But it's not a huge surprise. You know, it's kind of like that Kevin Hart line, you know, when you talk about Tebow being an NFL level quarterback, no, he wasn't ready. He wasn't ready. And so that's not a surprise. The surprise to me, though, is how people are kind of trying to turn this on Tim Tebow. And I'm not sure if it's Tebow fatigue or what, guys, because we're starting to get this narrative that Tim Tebow is selfish and he's bullheaded because he won't, you know, accept the transition to another position. First of all, that's not an easy thing to do. You know, it's easier said than done to make a position change at that level. Second of all, what would you do in that situation? You know, this guy really has only had one legit shot at a starting job in the NFL, you know, and that was Denver. New York, that quarterback situation was a travesty and a sham and a mockery. It was a travesty mockery. You know, it is fitting that Rex Ryan ran with the Bulls in the offseason, because Woody Johnson and the Jets organization have been running with Rex's bull for the past three seasons. But New England, I think it just ended up being a numbers game. You know, we're seeing more and more teams just stick with two quarterbacks. So, you know, you're not going to cut Ryan Mallett, who's been in that system for a few years now, and Tim Tebow was the odd man out. So I understand why the Patriots cut him, but, you know, whether you like the guy or hate the guy, Marcus, I don't get where people are saying, oh, you know, this is all Tebow's fault because he didn't, you know, switch positions. Like, that's something that he could have easily done in one offseason.
Well, I mean, he would have been just as bad as tight end as he is as quarterback. So I think the reason why he gets it more than, say, like a Troy Smith or someone is he has the body for another position. He could easily be a tight end or an H-back in this league, based on his physique and size. So I think that's why people do say, hey, why don't you switch positions? Because people know in the NFL that he's not cut out to be in this league. And hopefully this is the end of Tim Tebow in the NFL. And maybe, you know, the CFL Montreal owns his rights, and they could use a quarterback. Their starting quarterback is 41 and hurt. And they recently signed Troy Smith up there in Montreal. So if he can't cut in the CFL, then he should really just get out while he can.
Actually, I think, you know, the CFL may be worse for Tim Tebow because of the way that the field is wider. They play a more wide-open game. I think for Tim Tebow to be effective, the only way Tebow is going to be effective as an NFL quarterback is you have to design an offense around Tim Tebow. We saw in the preseason with the Patriots, the one or two series that Bill Belichick allowed Tebow to play that read option, you know, he had some success, limited success, but he had some success. But if you want Tim Tebow to be your prototypical drop back passer staying in the pocket, that's not going to work no matter, you know, if you give him one off season or two off seasons or give him 10 off seasons. He's not going to get it because he's not equipped to play in that role, Alfred.
His best bet is really developing through the CFL, and I shudder to say the Arena Football League, because you have to be deadly accurate to play there. There's such tight windows, but that's where we are. And Tim Tebow is the type of person, he will always be defined by his passion, his desire, his work ethic, and his refusal to give up. So I see him doing whatever it takes to become an NFL quarterback, whether people mock or ridicule him or not. He's the opposite of Johnny Manziel, a guy who's thick skin with a lot of character, and he's going to continue to try, which I do admire. And just, again, not to harp on Bill Belichick too much, but let's also focus on not only who he brings in, who he's left, you know, run out of town. And that's a guy, Wes Welker, who the Patriots desperately need right now with their depleted receiver core. Wes Welker was run out of town after averaging over 100 catches while with New England. Again, those aren't Jacoby Jones numbers, but they're very good numbers. And Wes Welker is somebody who could have been a stud for New England right now.
Yes. So, well, I mean, we'll leave Tebow discussion here. I mean, just real quick, do you, yes or no, do you think, A, Tebow gets signed by anybody this season, and B, do you think that we've seen the last of Tim Tebow on an NFL roster?
Hell no and hell yes.
I'm going to be an optimist and say hell no, hell no. I don't think we see him this year, but I think he refines his craft, and I do expect him to see him. Maybe not as a quarterback. Who knows? We have not seen the last of Tim Tebow.
Yeah, I think it's a wrap for this year. Although I still think Tim Tebow walking in off the street is better than Blaine Gabbert. Like, I'm for real. Blaine Gabbert, I do not know why this man has a starting job and Tim Tebow and Vince Young are on the street right now. But, I think it's a wrap for Tebow this year. But I do see Tebow eventually making his way back into the league. You know, we see a lot of guys that kind of get hung around on rosters because of, you know, their what they bring to the locker room. You know, there's a lot of guys that you can look back over the years. It's like, why is this dude still have a job? And it's because he was one of those guys that had, you know, character, or he was a team mascot for whatever reason, however you want to define it. And I think somebody's going to give Tebow a shot down the line. Maybe not as a quarterback. Maybe he will have to give up on his dream and convert to a tight end, convert to an H-back. But I think Tim Tebow is a guy that if he puts his mind to something, he's not going to give up until he accomplishes that goal. So I wouldn't rule. I'm not going to bet against Tim Tebow. So we'll leave the Tebow conversation there. I did want to hit on real quick Alfred's beloved Packers. I mentioned Vince Young out the door, but then they just signed Seneca Wallace.
Yeah, that is a shock. And I don't know if there's something internal that we don't know about. That has to be it, because Vince Young, he wasn't a world beater, but he played well enough, I think, to warrant backup consideration, especially considering how important Aaron Rodgers is to that offense. If he was to go down, Seneca Wallace isn't leading the Packers to the playoffs. And I'm not saying Vince Young would have, but he would have had an outside chance, and he's got the same amount of athleticism and spring in his step that Aaron Rodgers does, and he's has a lot of success. He had success, limited success, but success as a starting quarterback, 31-19, not very bad.
So you're saying Vince Young fucked up then? He must have did something. You're saying he fucked up. He did something, right?
No, I don't know. But, well, the Packers GM, Ted Thompson, came out and basically took the blame. Said, it's my fault. We should have had Vince Young in camp sooner. It sounded like they liked him. It sounded like they wanted him to play for the Packers. But something must have happened. Maybe they just didn't think he was ready. I'm shocked that Seneca Wallace won the job and Vince Young didn't.
Well, how is Vince Young not ready and you just signed Seneca Wallace off the street and he's ready?
There's something that they are not telling us.
I mean, I'm not hating on Seneca Wallace. I love Seneca Wallace, full disclosure, NFL 2K5 for the PS2. Seneca Wallace was my franchise quarterback and my franchise quarterback, and we ran the league for a good 7 to 8 seasons with Seneca Wallace and Doug Flutie as my backup. So you shout out to Seneca Wallace, but it makes no sense
was
to make
this. Was it 2005 or 1995?
It was NFL 2K5. I had Doug Flutie as my backup just in case things went sideways with Seneca. And, we had a good little squad, man. Who was my man? My man changed his name. The running back used to play for the Texans. Come on, number 37. He changed his name and then kind of went crazy. He had a couple good seasons. I'm gonna have to actually look this up because it's gonna make me mad now. But yeah, it was
Dominic Williams. That's who it was.
Yes, Dominic Williams, who was some. He had another name before that.
It was Dominic Davis. Right?
Yeah. Dominic Davis and Dominic Williams. Yeah, that was my star running back. And Seneca Wallace, we won 3 championships in Jacksonville, which is 3 more than Blaine Gabbert will ever see in his entire life. A lot of Blaine Gabbert hate today. I don't know. I was in such a good mood.
What did Blaine do to you?
I don't know. Before we started the show, I was in such a good mood. Went to a ball game today, Labor Day, and now Blaine Gabbert got me frustrated, irate. So we're gonna end the segment so I can do some woosahs and get my mind right. Because we got something to talk about in segment 2 that I think Marcus might be irate about.
Not just me.
Say something to me, Marcus.
I hit you for the hot tag. I got you.
Yeah, so coming up next in segment 2, not only are we going to talk about the big fantasy draft that took place over this past weekend, but we will also do the list that we did last week, but somehow it didn't get recorded. With your favorite fictional football players, we'll bring that back. So stick and stay. We got more Kings of Sport right after the break. She's my friends, but I'm in France. I'm just saying, Prince Williams ain't do it right if you ask me. Cause I was him, I would have married Kate and Ashley. Was Gucci my nigga? Was Louis my killer? Was drugs my dealer? What's that jacket, Margiela? Doctors say I'm the illest, cause I'm suffering from realness. Got my niggas in Paris, and they going gorillas, huh?
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
Ball so hard, motherfuckers wanna find me.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, sports talk for our generation.
Hope of the world is in our generation. It's all left up to us to change this present situation. Take lesson from our elders. Don't make the same mistake. Let's rule the world with love and get rid of all the hate.
We are back on the Kings of Sport podcast, powered by Place to Be Nation. We are a part of the Place to Be Nation family. Check them out for the latest news and information in sports, gaming, music, movies, wrestling, and much, much more. Place to Be Nation is your one-stop spot for the latest in pop culture. It's about that time, fellas. Fantasy football is upon us. We had the big draft this past weekend for the Briscoe Sanders Fantasy Football League. Let's just say, before we even get to the draft grades, let me just say that there are so many characters in this league. Like, if you were just watching this, I know, what's that, is it The League, the show they got on FX?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and like, we could do a spinoff of The League based on, you know, we got Marcus, we got myself, you got Big Nasty, we got Brother Ross out in Texas, Jamie's in the league, Dennis Black and Asian, my boy Lumagi, the franchise, who is quickly taking that number one the number one heat magnet, the number one heel spot away from Big Nasty. Like, he's almost turned Big Nasty babyface. Like, that's,
yeah.
You got to work hard to turn Alfred Cunningham babyface. I mean, it is going to be a fun season, but we did have our big draft, and I think we got 12 teams in the league, and I believe 8 teams were present for the draft. So my boy Ross wasn't, and auto pick murdered his team. Auto pick. I think he picked 3 quarterbacks in the first 6 rounds.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, yeah. But it could be worse. He could have picked Blaine Gabbert. Oh, it's not over. Just when you thought it was over, Blaine Gabbert fans. But the most interesting thing to me was after the draft is completed, and this is the first year, I guess, that I've seen it. I don't know if that's something Yahoo Sports has done before.
This is the first year.
Okay, because it was pretty cool. They got a fantasy draft report card. And let's take a look at the teams right here. Big Nasty's team, Twerk Molly Molly Twerk, scored a scored a respectable B grade.
Whatever.
My team, the regular team, yeah, we scored a respectable B grade. And Marcus Vanderberg. It's been a sad day. It's a dark day for Team Lightskin.
It's not a dark day. Don't get me started. Let's go. Let's just go.
Marcus
Vanderberg. Don't worry. Hurry up and
get
finish
him with
hurry
a up, hurry C grade for his team.
Are you done yet?
Oh, well, let me just read you some of the quotes, Marcus, that they say about your team. Selecting in the bottom half of the first round, TBD, that's Marcus's team, TBD was unable to conjure up any fantasy magic. With a projected record of 4-9, they're picked to finish 10th in the league. Week 9 looks to be a difficult one, as the top three projected scorers on TBD will be sitting out with byes. TBD might need to hit the waiver wire in Week 9.
And pick up a kick returner. How about that? Does it say that part? Let's talk about the settings in this league. How about we start from the beginning?
Talk about, you mean the ultra-realistic settings?
Whatever. Default is your friend for a reason. There's a default settings for a reason in fantasy leagues, people.
I agree.
Let's talk about your settings here. Let's pull this up. All right, so... passing yards, 50 yards per point. That's fine, whatever. That's a little high, but I can deal with that. Where it gets a little fishy... reception yards, 15 yards per point, as opposed to 10, which is the default, the fantasy default standard across all leagues. That's fine, whatever. Scroll down, return yards. This is my favorite. 10 yards per point, 20 points at 150 yards. So what you're saying is, it's better to have a kick returner in your starting lineup as opposed to someone like a Calvin Johnson who I drafted, because they get more points per yard.
I mean, you can interpret it that way.
That's exactly how it's being interpreted. Can I read you the game log really quickly of a certain individual? Three receptions, one reception, three receptions, two receptions, zero. Two, two, zero, two, two, five, one, zero, three, one, three. 406 yards receiving. Yet, this man is a top 10 fantasy football player from last year. Jacoby Jones, ladies and gentlemen, scored more points in fantasy football than Arian Foster. Joshua Cribbs, who's out of the league, had more points than Calvin Johnson. What world are we in? Do you get fantasy points for failing conditioning tests? Is that what's going on here?
I just think you guys are severely undervaluing the importance of special teams.
Come on.
Three phases of football, gentlemen. Offense, defense, and special teams.
But why is special teams more important than offense?
It is. Look, I'm a Green Bay Packer guy. The fact that Randall Cobb scored more points than every other fantasy player is absolutely ridiculous and asinine, and I move to strike.
Says asinine, asinine, asinine 11.
Why, can we get an explanation from the, I mean, obviously there's nothing we could do about it right now, but I want to know what the reasoning was behind putting so much value in an otherwise minuscule player that the NFL is trying to phase out anyway in the kick returner.
Well, speaking, you know, on behalf of the league commissioner, who could not be in attendance today, these are carryover statistics, and there were some reconfiguring of the scoring metrics over the weekend after some concerns were raised. But in the course of reconfiguring, there were some things that were completely overlooked, such as team defense.
No, don't get me started on that either.
And there were some things from previous years that were not adjusted, such as the special teams' impact on the game. And, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to this. There's accounting errors. And I don't know why this has turned into a witch hunt all of a sudden.
I feel like this is a setup for Alfred and I to not win this league.
I agree. You know, if I would have known.
Just because my team consists of Devin Hester, Josh Cribbs,
Jacoby Jones. I forget him. He's a stud.
He's on the franchise. The franchise who won this league last year knew these hokey settings, and he drafted appropriately.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this with the naked eye. As if this was a common sense league, thinking, wait a minute, why is this guy loading up on kick returners? Is there something that I don't know?
And I taught it too late because I pinned you off and I said, hey, don't draft IDP guys who play. Just draft guys who kick return for IDP because that's how you get points in this league, is return yards. So I look forward to losing in the playoffs when Jacoby Jones returns a kick for 30 yards and that seals my fate. It's going to happen. I know it's going to happen.
Hey, just because you were unable to conjure up any fantasy magic, don't blame the league.
I blame the league. I have a solid team on paper that would compete in a default league, but because we're playing under these new rules here, the TNA rules of fantasy football, in my team with Peyton Manning, Calvin Johnson, Reggie Wayne, Stephen Ridley, Reggie Bush, James Jones, Zach Sudfeld, on the bench at that Mike Wallace, Kenny Britt. I would say, what's the point? I might as well go pick up Josh Cribbs and hope he gets signed for an NFL team. He's going to be the hottest commodity on the free agent wire whenever he gets signed.
You know what? Full disclosure. Like, I mean, I only picked up on this after we talked a little bit the other night after the draft when we were talking about the defense. And I went back to look at the settings, and I was like, because we made that setting change probably 3 or 4 years ago. And I hadn't went back and looked at that setting change since. And I'm like, wait a second. And I'm like, maybe that's how. And I went back and looked at franchise's team from last year. And I'm like, sure enough. So, yeah, Josh Cribbs, Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, they will be hot commodities once the waiver wire begins.
So there's no way you could change this.
I mean, it would have to be a league vote. Like, there's no way I could arbitrarily change this now after all the teams have drafted.
I think it's worth consideration.
I will post the question in the league, and being so close to the benevolent commissioner that we have, he's not like Roger Goodell or Bud Selig, one of these ineffective, bumbling commissioners. He listens to the people. So I will talk to the commissioner and see about posing the question to the teams amongst the league.
Please.
Please do so. And whatever the franchise says, just ignore him. I mean, whatever. He's a mark.
He's a troll.
Come on. When you have a picture of Bray Wyatt as your fantasy icon.
But he did have the best draft grade.
Yeah, and if he changed the settings to what it should be, he wouldn't have the best draft grade, now would he? His team is pretty flawed. I mean, his team, if they don't stay healthy, he's screwed. Because between Brandon Marshall, Jamal Charles, and Frank Gore, that's...
Oh.
Barry, and Gronkowski, and Rob Bradshaw, and Mendenhall, that's a walking IR list there. So, we'll see. And he was smart. He didn't take a defense, because defense in this league doesn't matter. So...
Yeah, and that was something that got screwed up when I was changing the settings, because I for some reason I clicked it blank, and then I went back and, you know, so that got left out. So, yeah, we've got defenses where the most you can get on defense is 6 points, and that's if your defense scores a touchdown.
My defense is currently projected to score 1.2 points, and I think that's 1.2 points too many.
Yeah, so there was defenses last year who had 0 points. So yeah.
There will
for
be...
the season, by the way, not just for a week, for the season. So good luck with that.
There will be some I will talk to the commissioner. We will make a post and try to get this resolved by Thursday or by Wednesday.
You got a couple days.
Yeah, so we will get that going. But to end this on a note of unity before we move to the list, Brother Franchise did ridicule my pick of Alfred Morris in the first round, who will have another standout season. But I would just like to say it's not the first time I bet on an Alfred, and that one turned out pretty well.
Wow.
I mean, mountains of cougars and pilfering drinks and pissing off people in Stamford, Connecticut aside, I think that pick turned out pretty well.
We're all a little bit flawed, aren't we?
Oh, man. So, yeah, let's go from that, the greatest fantasy football league in the world, to your greatest fictional football players ever. We had some answers from you guys last week, and, you know, we don't like to get feedback and not read it. So since it got cut out last week, instead of doing a new topic, we're going to hit this one again. Plus, it's a fun topic. Brother Marcus, you got some names. You're going to sit this one out this week.
I'm going to sit this one out. I thought you guys did it last week, so I didn't come up with a list. I will just give a quick honorable mention to Jason Pitts of the game for the Pitts and Shuffle.
There you go.
Actually, the entire
the San Diego Sabres squad.
The Sabres, you know, when the show actually focused on football and not people hooking up, you know, there was actually football on the show, on the game.
Before Brandy ruined it.
Pretty much, Chardonnay. Come on now. But yeah, shout out to Malik and Jason Pitts. And
Derwin.
Derwin, yeah. So, there's my three, the cast of the game.
All right. That's actually good, and it'll lead me to my list, so I'll go second. And the first guy on my list is Jason Pitts. Jason Pitts is a great character. You know, he's that veteran on the squad. He was the voice of reason within the Sabres clubhouse. Much like Marcus, you know, it must run in the light-skinned jeans to be the voice of reason. the Pitsy Shuffle was great. He transitioned into that career as a broadcaster when his playing career was done. He got drunk and ended up marrying Brandy in Mexico. He was married to Kelly Pitts in the first few seasons of the game, and they always had some good storylines going with their relationship. So Jason Pitts, you know, because he's a guy that you either love or you love to hate. So Jason Pitts, great character. That's number one on my list. Number two on my list, Sunshine Ronnie Bass from Remember the Titans. Coach Herman Boone and was it Coach Yost? They were looking for a quarterback to lead this ragtag bunch of integrated black and white football players. And their savior, their hope, came from California in the form of Ronnie Sunshine Bass, a long-haired looking hippie kid that came in and merged with those players to lead them to victory. And, you know, what Sunshine was great in the movie. I'm sure he was great in real life. I think he ended up playing at South Carolina. But Sunshine, a great player from Remember the Titans. And also, honorable mention, shout out to Petey from Remember the Titans. That one of my favorite scenes is when Petey gets burned he get burned on offense and he sulked. And then Coach Yost put him in on defense. And Coach Denzel's like, who put Petey in the game? And Petey flourished on defense. So shout out to Petey, who, interesting trivia note, Petey is now a security guard at the T.C. Williams. Petey is a security guard at the high school, so Petey did not forget the Titans. And finally, my favorite fictional football player of all time, Jimmy Dix from The Last Boy Scout, portrayed by Damon Wayans. You know, there's been many great fictional quarterbacks. I mentioned Sunshine. Marcus mentioned Malik Wright. You can't go wrong with any of the Keanu Reeves quarterbacks, Shane Falco or Johnny Utah. But to me, Jimmy Dix is my favorite. And Damon Wayans is a guy that you wouldn't think could portray athletes so well. But he's done it three times already. He was James the Grim Reaper Roper in The Great White Hype. He was, I don't know the basketball player's name, but he was the basketball player in Celtic Pride that they tried to kidnap. And he was Jimmy Dix in The Last Boy Scout. And Jimmy Dix was cool. He was this player that got kicked out of the NFL for gambling. And the league is going through all these shady things, and there's a big espionage plot behind the scenes. And the only people that can say today are Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans as Jimmy Dix. And I thought that was a great movie. Damon Wayans doesn't get a lot of props for those great string of movies he had in the early to mid-90s. And Jimmy Dix, Last Boy Scout, great movie. Again, shout out to Billy Blackstone that shot himself in one of the most memorable opening scenes of any movie I can remember, Billy Blackstone, The Last Boy Scout. So my list, Jason Pitts from The Game, Ronnie Sunshine Bass from Remember the Titans, and Jimmy Dix from The Last Boy Scout. So what you think about that, Big Nasty?
I like the list. Very, very vintage list. I like the old school feel to it in appreciation for the times.
Now, my question to Marcus, I know Marcus does not watch a lot of movies. Tell me you saw Remember the Titans.
Nope.
What?
Wow.
Marcus, you got to get on that, man.
Wow. Forget this fantasy.
There's a list. It's not at the back of the list. The movies have shit.
Forget the fantasy draft grade. Marcus's movie watching grade is he failing on that, man. You
listen,
never
I,
seen
I spent,
Remember the Titans.
I spent part of my writing career as a TV blogger, so a lot of my time in my formative college, post-college years was spent watching TV.
Remember the Titans came on TV?
It wasn't a TV show, though. The difference. And then, you know, working at BET, I really, you know, if a movie came on BET, I wasn't trying to watch BET, on, you know, when I wasn't on the clock, so there was a lot of those movies, so it's on the list, though.
Right, I'm adding this because I do want to experiment and try to do one Kings of Sport commentary when we watch a movie, so Major League is already among the candidates, and I'm putting Remember the Titans on the list now.
Okay.
One of the candidates, because that is essential movie watching. Like, I'm not going to say it's the greatest football movie ever, but it's up there, and it's a Disney movie, which makes that even more impressive. So that's... Mark, Alfred, go ahead with your list, man, because I'm starting to get a little depressed now.
We got to start with the great Willie Beeman.
Yes.
Portrayed by Jamie Foxx on Any Given Sunday, which I think was a very underappreciated movie. I think a lot of people were afraid to accept it because the NFL gets very sensitive when people make movies and documentaries and stuff of that nature, peeling the curtain back. And I thought Any Given Sunday was a very good movie. Jamie Foxx was very good as a young, cocky upstart quarterback who was going to take over for Cap Rooney. And if there's ever one movie you should watch for a monologue, it's Any Given Sunday and Al Pacino's pregame talk at the end of that movie. If that doesn't get you fired up, check your pulse. My number two fictional athlete, we're going to go with Michael Orr from The Blind Side. That's right. Orr goes based on a real athlete. But that movie was pure fiction. Michael Orr already knew how to play football when he was being recruited. He was not taught how to play football by a blonde white lady. As good as Sandra Bullock was in that movie was more fiction than fact. Even Michael Orr himself says he's tired of hearing about it and talking about it, and that there was a lot of fiction in there. So good job, Hollywood, on making a movie that got Sandra Bullock an Oscar, but it was just that, a movie. And my third fictional athlete comes from the world of fantasy football. Jacoby Jones. The only place you will ever be relevant is in the Briscoe Sanders League. This man had one more touchdown receiving than I did last season. Yet he's a top 10 fantasy football commodity.
Number 7 to be exact.
Somebody who scored more points than the likes of Calvin Johnson, AJ Green, who could go down as two of the greatest wide receivers of all time, and Arian Foster. It is not okay. This is a fantasy, as the league indicates. Fictional fantasy football athlete Jacoby Jones gets my third slot.
What a lot of shots fired at Jacoby Jones today.
What a list. Brilliant, Alfred. Brilliant.
Wow. What do you guys think? Yeah, great. Thank you, Marcus. Obviously, give me kudos. Nathan, do you agree?
I feel some type of way about that.
you should talk to Tanish about that.
You really should. We should have him on the show.
Man, yeah, I'll see if we can get an interview with him. He's a busy man. But, Jacoby Jones aside, Michael Orr, that's a good one. Willie Beeman, though, Any Given Sunday, another great movie that Marcus probably hadn't seen.
Parts of it.
But, that is, you mentioned that speech with Al Pacino. The it's very inspirational and probably one of my favorite Al Pacino roles. And he's like, you know, the inches we need are everywhere around us. Then every break of the game, every minute, every second, we claw with each fingernail for that inch because we know when we add up those inches, they make the difference between winning and losing, living and dying. So that's a great speech. Jamie Foxx was kind of playing this Michael Vick kind of prototype or archetype. Kind of reminded me of that first year with the Falcons when who was it? I think Vic had to battle Chris Chandler. Chris Chandler was still hanging around. And it really reminded me of that where, you know, Vic came in and really took the league by storm. And Jamie Foxx's Willie Beeman really captured that. But there were so many great people in that movie. LL Cool J, Lawrence Taylor, your girl Cameron Diaz.
Jim Brown was in that movie.
Jim Brown, yes, one of the assistant coaches. what's my man? James Woods was in the movie.
Yeah.
A lot of great talent in that picture. So shout out to Any Given Sunday. But you've heard our answers. Now it's time to hear your answers. And each and every week you can leave feedback for the list on Twitter at Cospod, KOS underscore POD, or on Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. And I'll start it off with some feedback on Twitter from Joe Nathan, who says, you can't start this list without mentioning Booby Miles from Friday Night Lights, the movie version. So Booby Miles, big part of that movie, big part of the book, if you've read the book. So nice choice right there by Joe Nathan on Twitter. Brother Alfred, do you have our Facebook feedback up?
Yeah, we got a lot of feedback on Facebook. We're going to start with Jermone Jackson, who says Bobby Boucher, of the two Adam Sandler football films, Waterboy was far superior. Some of these current athletes can learn something from Boucher. You don't need PEDs to succeed, just a little high-quality H2O. Amen. Number two, Rod Tidwell of Jerry Maguire. How could we forget? Do I even have to say the catchphrase that propelled Cuba Gooding Jr. to Oscar gold? Sadly, poor Cuba has become Hollywood's version of The Miz.
Interesting side note. Did you know the character of Rod Tidwell was based off of Jacoby Jones?
I would believe it. He's a big enough star, so I believe it. Number three, Flash Gordon, a memorable movie, a theme song that most wrestlers could kill for in a spot on the New York Jets. Well, two out of three ain't bad. Ouch. Justin Wilson chimes in with Becky O'Shea. Simple, to the point. Jack Pisco says Shane Falco from The Replacements. Al Bundy, 4 touchdowns in one game.
Yes.
And Lucy Draper, the place kicker from Necessary Roughness.
Necessary Roughness, underrated movie. Sinbad, Scott Bakula, Hector Elizondo. Good picture.
Shout out to Dennis and Frazier, Dennis Black and Asian. Real quick, what team is Dennis Black and Asian in our league?
Dennis is the Super Giants.
Okay. He didn't have a bad draft. He had a pretty good draft. Anton Lubchenko, place kicker for Springfield University, whose leg flew off kicking the game-winning field goal after Homer ran over it with a homecoming float. Fortunately, Dr. Hibbert, Julius, not Roy, was able to reattach it. Justin Wilson comes back with a loathsome kicker. I cannot read this for the life. Andre Kristoff, something Russian, Jr.
That was a good song, though.
Like, Kristako Vigilaskini. God, I can't do that. And then Jamie Robinson, Steve Latimer from the program. Dude was a roid monster. Becky Icebox O'Shea from the Little Giants. Quality linebacker, cheerleader. Nigel Gruff from The Replacements. He's wiry.
Wiry. That was a good movie too. The Replacements with Keanu Reeves. I enjoyed that picture.
Yeah, and that's our feedback.
All right, so
very good, very strong stuff.
Great job, guys. Leave feedback each and every week. Facebook.com/thekingsofsport or Twitter Cospod KOS_POD. That's gonna do it for segment two. Coming back with the ringside wrap. And we'll see what's going on. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about with the world of TNA wrestling.
I thought the fantasy league was dysfunctional. TNA, boy. Whole nother level, man.
Yeah, more Kings of Sport, right after the break.
Tackles, knocking helmets loose. Come on, I will run this time. Guarantee first down. My name is Will.
We've always said the Kings of Sport was the best podcast around, but now the reviews are in and the people have spoken. Here's what you had to say about the show. This is a sports podcast for the people, by the people. There are no old guys talking about the good old days. These are brothers that are connected to what's going on now. They bring you the latest information as well as comparing current events to historical ones. If there is one sports podcast that you need to listen to, make it this one. This is a very good show with three brilliant co-hosts who keep it real. Younger guys with great minds for sports. They have differing opinions and back it up with facts and figures. Always entertaining and an enjoyable listen. I am down with the Kings. The Kings of Sport is the best thing going on the internet. These guys rock. Give them a listen. You won't be disappointed. So there you have it. But you don't have to take their word for it. Find out for yourself. Listen to the Kings of Sport and make up your own mind. We guarantee we're the best show around. And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. You know what time it is. Each and every week we bring you the hottest news and information from the world of professional wrestling in a segment we like to call the Ringside Wrap. But before we get into the big stories of the week, we got to handle some business and shout out to good people at Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks with over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre. Thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and many, many more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. And for you guys, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out the service. Now, we talked for weeks and weeks about some of the great titles you can find on Audible. Titles like Gone Girl, titles like Bad Luck and Trouble, titles like Last Season, titles like The War for Late Night. I'm sure if you want, you could probably even find Jacoby Jones' autobiography, I'm the Best, Don't Hate, That's What I Do. I think that's on the new bestsellers list.
But, I got to get that book.
Yeah, you got to get that book. Maybe he'll autograph the audiobook for you. But to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport for your free audiobook. You guys are down with the Kings of Sport. We're down with Audible, so get down with audible.com. And like I said, this is the Ringside Wrap, and TNA fans, we got some good news and some bad news.
What's the good news?
The good news is we're going to spend most of the segment talking about TNA. The bad news is we're going to spend most of the segment talking about TNA. The news for TNA over the past month, a couple of months, has been some pretty pretty bleak news coming out between the cuts and the money situation, the bungling of contracts, the house show fiascos, the Bound for Glory series fiasco, the debacle that it's become. And, you know, all of this has led me to do something that in my over 15 years of broadcasting I've never done. And that is, I'm going to eat during this segment. Now, this segment has, TNA has caused me such distress over the past month or so that I'm going to have to eat this delicious Marie Callender chicken pot pie with the all-white chicken meat and the carrots and the peas and all that good stuff to raise my spirits. So, Brother Marcus, why don't you start and let the people know, first of all, some of the good news, maybe the one good bright spot for the week with TNA, and that is the status of AJ Styles' contract.
Well, if you can call it good news, because he went out and cut this stupid promo in the ring. AJ Styles has re-upped a temporary contract until December. That's what Meltzer's reporting. But then he goes out on to Impact on Thursday, and he cuts like this quasi-shoot promo, sort of ripping the company and ripping his character, how they've been portraying him. And it was just real, like, inside wrestling, like too inside for me. And I follow wrestling pretty closely, and I couldn't tell what the hell he was talking about. So, I, you know, it sounded like he had permission to sort of go out there and vent, but I just don't get where they're going with AJ's character now and what, you know, the ultimate endpoint is. If he re-upped until December, I'm assuming that means he'll win Bound for Glory and he'll get his match, his title match, but what's the endpoint for this guy?
Yeah, he's all over the place. One minute he's AJ Styles with the Main Event Mafia. The next minute he's back to being the loner AJ Styles. And I don't really have a problem with shoot promos. The thing about shoot promos is you have to bait your time when you're doing these. The reason CM Punk's was so monumental because that was the first time in about 5 years that had been done. So you got to separate them to create the image that they're real. AJ was very good, but again, it would have been a while since anything had been done like that in the WWE. Now, for TNA to turn around and do a very similar type of shoot promo, again, these apply to pro wrestling. So, saw AJ Lee do this, and then now AJ Styles is doing it. It completely takes away the value from it, aside from the fact that it really wasn't that good of a promo to begin with.
Yeah, I would say that there were some parts of it that were good, but it was just so uneven. Like, what are you trying to say, AJ? Like, there were so many things that they did wrong with AJ last week. I mean, you saw the reaction that he got in Norfolk, you know, when he first kind of turned back to a babyface. And you saw the connection he had with the crowd. And TNA, and I guess in some part AJ Styles, did the most ineffective thing they could do. First of all, you had the Bound for Glory series where AJ needed a submission win to advance, and they had him go for a pinfall. And then you had him come out and cut this discombobulated promo. And like I said, I'm not one of these guys that hates on AJ Styles in terms of cutting promos. He's not the best, but I don't think he's as bad as some people want to, you know, make him out to be. But this promo was just so uneven and so all over the place. And the crowd could not connect to what he had to say. And it was in stark contrast to, you know, the AJ Styles that we saw a week prior who got that great ovation in Norfolk.
I mean, the whole gimmick of him doing the same routine he did in Norfolk, where he came down halfway, changed the music. All right, that's old, you know. We get it, you know, you're a good guy now. So that was stupid. And then the promo itself, I don't know. But that was even the most frustrating part of Impact. I think it comes down to either Hulk Hogan or...
We got a title match coming up right now, this week.
Yeah, it was Hogan.
With the guy that's not supposed to get a title match.
Yeah, and then the match didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
After all that.
Oh. Yeah. And it speaks to organizational problems with TNA. You could just see the discombobulation backstage just by looking at the in-ring product. And we've heard stories come out like how Bound for Glory doesn't have enough competitors or matches and might finish up early, so they're going to have to scramble for that. This BFG series thing has been an abject failure. It just goes. Wrestling is so much better when it's just simple. When people can relate. Let's face it. Geniuses aren't watching pro wrestling, all right? Pro wrestling's fan base is very simple. Keep it simple. One guy who deserves a title shot chasing the champion. That's all you need. TNA can get way too ambitious sometimes.
And the crazy thing is they actually got the BFG series right last year.
Right.
So it's not like this is the first year they've ever done it. You know, they got it right last year. And something to me, speaking, you know, at a larger point with TNA, is maybe it's just me, but looking in, I think if you look at the time Jeff Jarrett was in charge, the storylines because of Vince Russo were probably worse overall than they are now, but the company as a whole was much more secure and much more better organized and more efficiently run behind the scenes. Whereas now, you could argue that the storylines have been better, but everything organization-wise, talking about TNA, has crumbled, you know, and that goes to Dixie Carter. And you know, I'm sure she's a nice person. I'm sure she cares about the talent, but she is the wrong person for that job. And now, you know, her power has been limited. But, you know, you got the Carters coming in, the Panda Energy people. You got the Spike people. There's too many cooks in the kitchen. And you see just a lot of chaos backstage. So, honestly, I think things were better when Jeff Jarrett was in charge, and I never thought I would say that about TNA.
Blame Bischoff. Let's just blame Bischoff. It's a lot easier that way.
And yeah, and Bischoff and Hogan. And first of all, let me say I give Bischoff credit for knowing how to produce television. In terms of wrestling television, he's up there. He's I don't know if he's the best, but he's one of the best in terms of just strictly production. But yeah. Some of the things that you hear him say, you know, they had that big Q&A in Toronto a week or so ago, and him and Hulk are blaming Spike TV for some of the reasons why the company is having these difficulties. Those are stupid excuses, and Bischoff is, you know, he's past his prime. Hulk's past his prime. These guys have got to go because they are killing this company softly and loudly and slowly. And, you know, more, you know, the TNA's, I think the Spike contract runs through next fall. But if this is the kind of chaos and disorganization that Spike is getting for their money, I don't see them sticking by this product too long after that contract is up.
And you mentioned how they're past their prime. Even when they were in their prime, they couldn't manage to get WCW to compete with WWE on a long-term basis. It was only about a year and a half that they were able to be dominant before that ship sank. So the fact that they're out of their prime trying to do the same thing really, really should scare a lot of people.
I give them until now, January 2014. I'm moving my date up here. I'm moving it up. These shows are costing way too much money. It's not like people are buying pay-per-views or even... you know, selling out these arenas. It's just something doesn't add up. Eventually the money's going to run out and the backing's going to run out, and then they're going to be left with a tough decision of what to do with this company. Do you take like a 6-month sabbatical to sort of regroup and sort of restructure, or do you just, you know, pull the plug, you know, try to make Vince an offer for the library and whatnot and just move on? I don't know what else, I don't know what you can do at this point, because it seems like they're at the point now where their fan base is what it is. It's not going to grow, and it's not going to drop. So unless these guys are going to start buying the pay-per-views and you see a real increase in ratings, I just don't see what the end game is for the company.
To me, the only saving grace, the only light on the horizon, besides Bound for Glory in San Diego, is Hogan's contract is coming up pretty quickly. And if Spike TV has any sense, has any guts, has any testicular fortitude, they will look Terry Bollea in the eye and say, hey, you were great at one point. You're still probably one of the 5 or 10 most recognizable people in this industry, but you are not right for this company. Any opportunity you have in the mainstream, you deflect this company, you don't own this company, you don't show it love, you don't, you know, you're a part of this thing. Why are you not working to make this thing work? So you're out, Bischoff, you're out. Both Garrett and Eric. Mr. Anderson, if you don't restructure your contract, you're out. I would go in. Somebody's got to at Spike. It's got to be a Spike decision, because ultimately they are the broadcast partner. Somebody at Spike's got to, you know, put their foot down and say, hey, either get it right or come next fall, it's going to be a wrap.
Yeah, I remember when TNA fans were teased with Paul Heyman possibly coming in, and he went, and I believe he talked to Ariel Helwani, and he said, if I went into TNA, if you're over 40 years old, I'm going to cut your bleeping head off. And I think that should be the approach for anybody who's coming into TNA.
And it doesn't even have to be somebody like a Paul Heyman. I mean, there's so many young creative minds out there. I mean, Gabe Sapolsky, I mean, our buddy Court Bauer, you know, he could do a better job than what we're seeing currently on the programming. I mean, not to toot our own horn, but I would argue that the three of us could put together a better or at least a more coherent show than we're getting week to week on TNA.
We should at least count the dates and realize, okay, we need X amount of guys to wrestle this week before the end of September to get this tournament done. I mean, why not just go to a Chain of the Ring tournament format? Just go a 16-man single elimination tournament and just do it that way. Because who wants to, I mean... Really, do you want to see these guys wrestle every week for 10, 11 straight weeks? I don't. It just all blends in together. None of the matches stand out in this series. There isn't one match that you can look back and say, oh, that was a great match. It's all just blended in together.
Yeah, so let's leave TNA there for this week. But that's got me thinking. Maybe we should start a Kickstarter. If you guys want to see the Kings of Sport take over TNA.
Job. No. I hell no.
Yes, we do.
No,
and you know what, fans? If we take over TNA, my first order of business, new world champion, Jacoby Jones.
Everybody's doing the job to him. He's not going to be the best wrestler. He's not going to know any technical holds or anything. But damn it, he can return a kick, and that's all that matters. That'll be his entrance. His entrance, he stands up at the ramp, and he gets the ball, and he catches it and runs into the ring.
He'll just be juking by. We'll bring SoCal Val back and put her in there like a tackling dummy. He jukes by.
Come on, Marcus. How fun does this sound?
Yes. You know you want to be a part of this team, Marcus.
I don't want to work for... No, I want no part in trying to book TNA.
And you work for BET.
I work, and that's the reason why I don't want to go back to Dysfunction. I did that. I did my time.
We need that experience dealing with Dysfunction in order to run TNA. Nah. Otherwise, if it's just me and Nate running TNA, everybody's going to be on crack.
Yeah. and all the knockouts will be twerking.
Yeah.
So, well, speaking of the ladies, before we get out of here for this segment, Total Divas and, like you mentioned earlier, AJ Lee's quote-unquote diva pipe bomb. What did you guys think of that this past week? I thought it was probably one of her best promos. It didn't really fit the context of the Raw show, but for what they want to do with Total Divas, it totally works.
You know, I think it did fit the context of the Raw show because she brought it back to the Divas title, and it put a lot of value on the Divas title. And I got a little bit of heat for this, but I basically went on Bleacher Report and wrote that the Divas title right now is more valuable than the World Heavyweight Championship, if you'll believe that. Alberto Del Rio is one-dimensional. His feud with Ricardo Rodriguez is being put forefront as the main concern. Nobody cares about that title. Meanwhile, AJ comes out. She cuts a very well-done, very logical, fluid promo on the Divas saying, basically, you guys are just using reality television to become famous. I'm the best. I have this title. And it's going to turn into a storyline where if you want to prove that you're the best, come after this title. And that title is going to be on national television on a major cable network like E. And it's adding value to that division and that title. So I thought it was very good.
I totally agree with you about the value of the title. I mean, it's probably, you almost make the argument that it's second behind the WWE title because Intercontinental Championship,
Yeah.
The tag team title, U.S. Championship, So, yeah, you're probably right. It's probably the second most valued title at the moment, and a lot of that is because of AJ.
Why are you throwing shade on our great U.S. champion, Curtis Axel?
It's Dean Ambrose.
Exactly my point.
That's okay.
Is Axel the Intercontinental Champion?
He is, and I was actually hoping that Punk... Even though he didn't need the title, but I was hoping he would win the title and just
bring some prestige,
just to save it. I mean, I'd rather him have the title and actually bring it back to the days of like the mid-90s where the title meant something he decided to do with Brian or whatever happens with that whole thing with Orton. So
That just goes to show how non-valuable that title is. You have CM Punk feuding with Curtis Axel, the Intercontinental Champion. And at Night of Champions, where the gimmick is that you defend every title, the title's not on the line.
That's how bad it is, yeah.
Yeah, so, I thought AJ's promo was really well done. We'll see, in terms of the Divas division taking off, because, I mean, they've got a lot of interest with the Total Divas crew being injected into it, but in reality, in terms of workers, they've got about as many workers as the knockouts. And it's like four or five chicks, and that's about it.
Yeah.
So, that was one of the highlights of the week in terms of wrestling. And I hate to say it, but she had the best AJ promo of the week. Sorry, Alan Jones.
Hands down, she did.
But but I do take comfort in the fact that this is one hell of a pot pie. Marie Callender, you have outdone yourself, girl. That sounded way too seductive for
Did it cheer you up?
Yeah, it really did. It really did. Like I'm happy now.
All right.
When you said you're eating Marie Callender's pie, I didn't know.
I'm saving that for Kings of Sport After Dark. That's a whole other type of radio program. So, yeah, that's the ringside wrap for this week. Basically, what we've learned is Total Divas is probably the best wrestling program on TV. TNA, according to Marcus, may be dead by January. And Pop Pies are delicious.
I love Total Divas. It's the highlight of my Sunday.
You watch it with your lady?
I do watch it with my lady.
Does she enjoy it?
She does enjoy it.
How does she react to that episode when Natalya went out with the muscle dude?
Oh, I think with her, it's more, she's more concerned that they've been dating for 10 years now.
Yeah.
And they still haven't tied the knot. I think that's more.
Yeah. That's all of a sudden, all of a sudden a TV show come up, you want to get married.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and spoiler, they did get married. So they figured out whatever issues they had, stripped it or not. So, but the takeaway from last night's episode was JoJo and Justin Gabriel, and they're pretty much 2 or 3 day fling before JoJo found out that Justin Gabriel was into other women. And
now Randy Orton's into JoJo.
I'm hoping they show this, how this happened. And this is the story that people haven't picked up on yet, but if you looked at his Twitter account, the man follows one person, JoJo Offerman.
Like that brown sugar.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Oh man, yeah, we might have to see if we can holler at JoJo. I mean, then again, the people at Stanford kind of hate Big Nasty, but we'll maybe he'll be absent that week.
We'll just kiss and make up. I'll make it right.
It's a lot of kissing.
you might have to join a certain club for that. Club,
don't suggest that.
Look at it, Big Nasty. It can do tricks. I can make it jump. Who's twerking now, Big Nasty? Who's twerking now?
Now I have that in my mind.
And on that note, we're going to end up the Ringside Wrap for this week. But don't go anywhere, because we're going to close up shop with segment 4, more Kings of Sport, right after the break.
This is Court Bauer of MLW Radio, and you are listening to Kings of Sport. Get on with it now.
Habla Morgan Campbell del Toronto Star, y cuando no estoy escribiendo, estoy escuchando los redes deportivos, porque yo soy Down with the King.
We are back, ready to close up shop on another great edition of the Kings of Sport, the big Labor Day edition. It's been a great show, been a fun show. But you know we can't leave you guys without doing the segment we do each and every week that you wait for. It's often imitated, but never duplicated. Segment 4, where we go into the wild and weird and wacky side of sports and pop culture and bring you some of the more interesting stories that you may not have heard. And this week, it's very rare that we do kind of a follow-up, you know, so immediately. But we talked about Lamar Odom last week, and look like there's more Lamar Odom news, including a crackhead lawyer. Just think about that whole thing. Let that marinate for a second. Crackhead lawyer. So, Brother Marcus, for those that haven't heard the latest about Lamar Odom, let the people know what's up.
Yeah, so you guys left off last week. Lamar Odom got popped for DUI. Out here in Southern California. Not a good look for Lamar. And I just, this happened the day of, I guess two former NBA players came by his house, and they worked with the league in terms of doing drug, substance, and rehab and trying to get guys straight. And I guess they had a conversation with Lamar, and after that conversation, he ended up leaving the house, and later that night, or early that morning, he got busted for a DUI, and the cops were suspecting not only alcohol, but drugs as well. So that happened, and then we found out about his drug enabler, who is a crackhead attorney, allegedly. Paulina Paulanski, according to TMZ. And it sounds like she was the one who Lamar was getting high with, and Chloe eventually found out and confronted Lamar, along with this woman, about what they're doing in terms of drugs. And the fact that she's an attorney and she is now labeled as a crackhead, what kind of attorney, what kind of bar are you passing if you're a functioning crackhead?
She ain't passing the bar, but she's passing that pipe.
Yeah. And this has been for 2 years now that Lamar and Paulina have been getting down. It's just, that's impressive. Impressive that Lamar can function in the NBA, but it's even more impressive that she can function in the courthouse.
Now, when she approaches the benchmark, is she like, I got something you may not know about me, Your Honor. I smoke rocks.
We might have to touch on Dave Chappelle before the end of the show as well.
Oh, yeah.
He had a meltdown.
It seems to me like this is unhealthy behavior from Lamar. And again, like me and Alfred were talking about last week, I'm not a psychiatrist, just kind of figuring things out and working things out here. But it seems to me like this is deflection. And like, instead of Lamar taking responsibility, he's trying to blame this crackhead lawyer. And she's not innocent by any stretch, but you're Lamar Odom. You're the NBA player. You have the most to lose in this situation. You can't point the finger at this chick.
Yeah, it's sad. I was hoping the track part wasn't true, but it seems, more each day the story gets dragged out that it seems like it actually is true. And if that's the case, then I really hope he gets the help that he desires and needs.
I mean, if the good part is, though, if he does have to go to court, I'm sure he can find a crack attorney.
Very nice.
Alfred, what are you thinking about this, man? What's going
well,
on?
Well, when it comes to Lamar Odom, he doesn't seem like the intervention type. Everybody tries to use intervention as the number one method of getting somebody to get clean and get help. But let's face it, the last two times this method has been used, he went off, disappeared for a couple days on end, and now we have this incident with the DUI, so maybe there needs to be another approach. Maybe he just needs to be tackled and held down or something like that, because this intervention is not working for Lamar Odom. He's very soft mentally. We've known that. It's why throughout his career he's been up and down, is because he's just not there mentally when it comes to being mentally strong. So, it's sad, and hopefully he gets some help.
Why don't they just trick him? Like, Marcus, the Family Guy episode where James Woods comes in, tries to kill Peter?
Yeah.
And the way they always trap James Wood at the end of those episodes is by leading him with the trail of candy and then trapping him? Why don't these people doing the intervention lead him with a trail of crack? Maybe you'll get Lamar. Maybe you'll get... The downside is you never know who's going to follow the trail. Like, you might be like, Otis Nixon? What are you doing here, baby? But, like, put the trail of crack out, and Lamar be like, oh, piece of crack. Oh, piece of crack. Oh, piece of crack. And then when you get him in the room, don't let him get out. Like, the problem with these interventions, it seems, is they're doing them at Lamar's house, where Lamar is still in control. He can leave. He can go out as he pleases, hop in the car, and do whatever. You got to get him away from his comfort zone, away from the place where he's in charge, and get him some serious help. Because, like Marcus said, and this is a sad story, there's a dude that has been very talented, been a good player for so many years, and it's not going to end well if he continues down this path.
No, I really fear that we're going to wake up one morning and we're going to find out he died either from an overdose or from an accident or just something tragic. It's just the way that he's doing right now. I think he can just forget about the NBA for the time being and just focus on cleaning up his life.
Now, is it true that, Marcus, you might have a better idea. I saw some stuff on the internet. I don't know the veracity of it, but did Lamar and Chloe separate?
It sounded like they did, but Chloe might have took him back in. That part I'm not sure about, but it sounded like he was staying at a hotel last week when he was quote-unquote missing, but he eventually returned home. So I'm not sure where he is at the moment, but I'm assuming that he's back home with Chloe.
Yeah, the Kardashians are probably planning the made-for-TV interview as we speak.
trying to get Lamar upright. Hopefully they get him clean, but there will be an interview and a lot of money to be made.
Interview? How about a reality series? Lamar gets clean.
Yeah.
Oh, gets clean? Okay, I thought you meant like Lamar's cracky lifestyle. They could call it Lions in the Sand.
Why, oh. You'd be like, why, Lamar, how come you keep paying your lawyer in stolen TV sets? What's up with that, baby?
Just keep Dr. Drew away because he has a bad luck for people in his rehab. So just keep Drew away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he doesn't drop dead somewhere and then we'll be good.
Yeah. So, we made a couple jokes, but, you know, we hope the best for Lamar Odom. Like we said last week and this week again, it's a sad story, but hopefully he can make a comeback from this. But let's talk about somebody who did make a big comeback, and Marcus mentioned it earlier. Dave Chappelle had an interesting weekend, and he showed the world once again why he is always going to be one of the most talked about people in the world of stand-up comedy. Marcus, what's going on with Chappelle?
Yeah, so Dave Chappelle is on tour, and he was in Hartford, Connecticut last week, and maybe 2 or 3 minutes into his set, the fans started to heckle him and boo him, and they wanted him to do basically Chappelle's show. And, you know, Chappelle is a stand-up comedian first. He's a television star second. You know, if you've seen his stand-up acts before, they're pretty hilarious. So he had wanted to do. He didn't want to do the old stuff, and he got tired of the booing, and he basically said, hey, you know, I'm obligated to be on the stage for X amount of minutes. I'm going to do X amount of minutes, and then I'm gone. So he sat on the stage, smoked his cigarettes, and wrote a book. And when the 30 minutes was up, the DJ played New Slaves, and he bounced. So that's the way to go. I mean, I'm a little concerned that he might be suffering from another meltdown, but at the same time, he had every right to do what he did. You know, you're paying money to see Dave Chappelle, the stand-up comedian, not Dave Chappelle from The Chappelle Show. And fans, i.e. white people, need to understand that, you know.
And more explicitly, these young frat boy crowd. Yeah.
That he's not going to shuck and jive for you and do
the bros.
I'm Rick James, bitch, and all this other stuff. Like, that's not why he's doing this tour. He's doing this tour to get a stand-up comedy career going again. So I'm down with Dave and what he did, and I feel sorry for the people who paid money who weren't heckling him because technically they got a show because he stayed on stage, so there's no refunds.
Yeah, and like you said, Dave Chappelle is one of the greatest comedians of all time. He's not like Steve Urkel going up there. He's not some one-character person. He's somebody who has a good act and who had a series of funny comedy specials leading up to Chappelle's show. And the fact that a lot of these people are just remembering him for that is pretty sad. Now, I will say this. I read online what happened before I watched the video, and it's being painted as a meltdown, and he freaked out on the crowd. So I'm expecting him to go crazy. He really didn't freak out. He just kind of said, all right, is this what you guys want? Fine, man, I'm not going to give you a show. This is what's going to happen. And it's like a message out there to people who want to pay to see Dave Chappelle only to heckle him. And this just had to happen. So I'm with what Dave Chappelle did. I agree with it. It is unfortunate for people who paid for it, and maybe it's not the best way to go about it. But this served as kind of a public service announcement to anybody who feels that they can take over a show like that.
And it just kind of adds to the legend of Dave Chappelle. And the only thing I think that would have been even funnier is if, because, you know, they kept wanting to hear these catchphrases and these taglines from the TV show, if after sitting down and not telling a joke or saying a word for 30 minutes, he got up and was like, game, blouses, and walked off the stage. Oh, man, but that, like, it just makes me, I don't understand why you would pay good money to go and heckle somebody.
Well, that's called wrestling, right? I pay good money to heckle John Cena.
Hey, I pay good money to support and cheer AJ Styles.
Yeah, we saw you clapping all on camera. You're clapping for the heels and baby faces. You were confused, so you're the exception. The rest of us have an agenda.
Hey, I was the star of Impact Wrestling that night. And that's only a slight exaggeration. But, Dave Chappelle, again, in the news. I am looking forward to Dave Chappelle's comedy, though, because as Marcus mentioned, you know, this dude isn't just Chappelle's show. This guy has, you know, hilarious movies. His stand-up is phenomenal. And, like, one of the funniest bits I think he did is when he was talking about how black dudes are always in Fear of the Police, and he was hanging out with his white friends, and he didn't understand how they had a different relationship with the police. And he's like, I was with my buddy Chip, and Chip was just drinking and speeding. And I was like, Chip, we gonna get pulled over, Chip. And I wanted him to stop drinking, but I was smoking a joint, so I really didn't have much room to say anything at the moment. And then he's like, they got pulled over, and the cop was like, do you know that drinking and driving is illegal? And Chip was like, I didn't know I could do that, officer. I'm sorry. And the officer let him go, and Dave was like, Chip, you didn't know you could do that? And then, you know, when Dave Chappelle does that, his stereotypical white man voice is over the top. He's like, that's the thing, Dave. I did know I could do that. So shout out to Dave Chappelle, and hopefully, you know, this setback or this incident won't dampen his fire for that stage. Because like Alfred said, once he's, if he's in his right mind to do so, he's still one of the funniest cats out there. But let's go from comedy to tragedy and kind of end the show off on a bit of a somber note. You know, a couple weeks back, I don't know if it was on air or off air, we were having a discussion about Tommy the Duke Morrison, former heavyweight boxer. And, you know, we were watching the clip of his fight with Merciless Ray Mercer, in which Tommy just got demolished. And, you know, we were talking about his appearance in Rocky V and some of the other things that went down with his career, you know, the HIV and fighting at Indian reservations. But I guess apparently today Tommy Morrison was found dead at age 44. Marcus, you got the details on that?
Yeah, he had been in the hospital for a while now and battling an illness. They didn't say if it was directly to AIDS or HIV, but yeah, he died today. It sounded like he hasn't been doing well for most of the year, and a real sad story. There was that point where he was sort of denying that he had HIV, which I didn't think was the right attitude, because it made me wonder if he was taking the proper treatment for this disease, if he was telling himself that he didn't actually have it. So, you know, we've seen that this is a disease that, if under control of the right medication, that you can live a healthy life, i.e. Magic Johnson. But at the same time, if you don't take care of yourself, it can really blow in. It can, you know, the HIV can turn into AIDS, and then it's just all downhill from there.
It was supposed to be the great white hope or the great white hype, and it just really didn't work out that way. But he was a very talented boxer and somebody who did show a lot of promise. So it's unfortunate the legacy that he seems to have, but you know, you never want to hear a story like this. And like Nate said off air, he did not look good at all in these pictures. And so it looked like he had been struggling with this for a while before his ultimate demise.
Yeah, so and again, you know, you can say what you want about his boxing career, how much of it was authentic, how much was manufactured. But, you know, for his day, he was a hard hitter. And, you know, love him or hate him, he was who he was. You know, I don't think he was ever the type to kind of put on a facade, put on a mask. He was this, was he from Oklahoma?
Born in Arkansas, raised in Oklahoma.
Okay, so yeah, he was this big, tough Southern cat that was just going to come out there and go toe-to-toe, nothing pretty about him, and, you know, that was kind of the way he lived his life. So, you know, again, we don't have all the details surrounding his death, but, you know, it's just a shame, because I do think maybe if Tommy had come across a little bit later, you know, maybe if he was an active fighter now and the HIV revelation came out, maybe, you know, he could have used that as a platform to be an advocate, you know, kind of like Magic in terms of safe sex and, you know, treating this disease and raising money. But in the era that Tommy got the disease, and also in the climate of boxing, I don't think they were quite ready for that from a fighter, Marcus.
No, and I'm surprised they've been pretty accepting to a gay fighter. But that was always a concern of mine, but yeah, they weren't ready in 96 for what Morrison was dealing with. And even though this was a good 5 years after Magic Johnson, boxing is a lot more physical sport. We're talking about a sport where cuts and blood is the norm, as opposed to basketball, where it's a rare occasion. So, yeah, unfortunately, he couldn't get the proper support he needed in the boxing community, I don't think. And it's just really unfortunate that that the timing of his disease happened when it did.
Yeah. So, again, rest in peace to Tommy the Duke Morrison. Again, Tommy was 44 and died earlier this morning. So, not the way we wanted to end the show, but again, we do want to bring you you know, the stories that people are talking about, and this is definitely something that will be discussed throughout the day and probably, you know, through the week. But you know, other than that, I think we had a pretty fun show. It was good to have a whole team back. You know, the show moves a lot better when Marcus is back, you know, and Alfred and I just thought left to go off on tangents and talk about twerking and NSYNC and crackheads.
And crack, yeah.
I mean, we did talk about crack this week, but
that was different.
Maybe we should just add a segment for crack.
This week in crack. Oh man, you crackhead lawyer. So yeah, if you take away nothing else from this show, let it be that A, Jacoby Jones is the best football player in the world.
Yep.
And B, never hire a crackhead lawyer. Just don't do it. So that's going to be it for this week. But before we get out of here, Brother Marcus, let the people know how they can follow you, how they can keep up with your work, and how they can get in touch with you.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Big Nasty.
At This Is Nasty. Follow me on Twitter so that I can keep you guys updated on the current situation of our fantasy football league. And go ahead, read me on Bleach Report, watch me. You know the drill. And you love me.
Yes, and I'm going to leave this recording and head to a emergency meeting. I just got in contact with the commissioner, so we'll see if we can have that situation resolved before the season kicks off on Thursday. But if not, you know, we'll make the best of it. We'll still have fun with it. But yeah, it will be a judicious decision by the league, including those with terrible draft grades, such as one Marcus Vandenberg. So you can follow me at N8 MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. You can follow all of us at COSPOD, KOS_POD, KingsOfSport.com, Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport, iTunes, Stitcher, like, rate, review, share. AudibleTrial.com/TheKingsOfSport, PlaceToBeNation.com. I think that's all the shilling I have for this week. We should just get one big announcement that we just tack on to the end of the show that says all of this. It'd probably save time. It so
that could work.
Yeah, I wonder if Jacoby Jones will sponsor us.
We'll have him on the show.
I mean, it would be a good return on our investment. Boom. That's how you end the show right there. That's that Popeye, the energy. The Popeye's giving me that energy. So that's it for this week. Happy Labor Day to everybody. We will be back next week with another great show. And that's it. So for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's ass. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.